Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Hey, what's going on?
If I knew, I'd tell you. Seriously. No.
Fair enough, yeah. Hey, I want to give you a pre-interview heads up that we've got a special third guest in tow for today's segment.
And who might that be?
It is up. There he is. He's chiming in.
I hear him.
Young Oliver, 10 months old, and a COVID positive at his school. Not him. He is free from disease, but
contact tracing.
You know, I guess. I don't know how it all works. All I know is that having not gotten all of the Christmas gifts that I need to get, and having planned on doing that this week, him being home, not a great turn of events.
You know what? He's the best gift you got this year.
There you go. That's the spin I count on right there. Love it.
Okay? The best gift you got this year.
Fair enough.
This has been a time where people have expected the roster to be different going into the bowl game. And we know for one position, linebacker is going to be very different. Any surprises to you so far?
No, not at all. I mean, there were pretty clear undertones, rumblings, really immediately after the Michigan State game that Ellis Brooks needed surgery, I think, on his hand. He obviously had his hand wrapped for the last couple of games. So that makes sense. And then Brandon Smith is a guy who, you know, I mean, even before the season, that was, I feel like I bring this up a decent amount, but I had an interview with Dwight Gault in August where Gault was really talking about how much of a athletic freak Brandon is. And that, you know, some of those guys, you get them to the combine, and it's just a open season, right? I mean, they're able to make their mark by being that athletically gifted, and you know, that's the way that it's transpired. Is obviously he's made that decision, and best of luck to him.
Well, it's interesting because Jack Ham was talking, and I was just standing there as a bystander. Jack was talking with Brandon. He said, "What's your body fat?"
Yeah.
And he said 3.9% or something like that.
Yeah.
To which then I held up my hand and looked at my hand, and it's like that's kind of like the equivalent. I mean, that's who he is. He is chiseled beyond words. In terms of the model as a pro linebacker, in terms of look, he's got the look.
Yep. No doubt. I mean, and look, when you're running a 4.39, a 4.41, whatever it is. I mean, it's just he's going to test off the charts. His vertical leap is 39 inches. I mean, he's got all these ridiculous numbers in the weight room, and you know, it's a combination, right? I mean, it's not some guys have strength, some guys have speed, but Gault made a pretty direct comparison in terms of those numbers, those athleticism numbers, to Michael Parsons with Smith. And it's just like, okay, well, if that's the case, the clock has changed, right? Like our understanding of how a career in professional football should go has really evolved, I would say, over the last 10 to 15 years, to where you start to understand. I mean, it becomes very, very clear now that if the earnings clock can start when you've reached that point where you don't know, where there's no demonstrable difference between, you know, your ceiling in terms of being drafted, start the clock. Get going. Get out there. Get playing, and go from there.
Well, Jack and I talk about that all the time, Nate. That, you know, you're sitting there and you know, you come out at the age of 21. It's not, you can start earning money right away. these players are now, through agents, savvy enough to know that now, at the age of 25 and not 26, they're up for their second contract, which is the one that sets them up for life. That's the clock that we're talking about.
Yep. Yep. No, 100%. And it's both, right? Like, if NIL changes the landscape a little bit to where these guys can earn a little bit of money to be comfortable, and it makes sense, you know, a situation even like Jahan Dotson had this year, right, where it's the blowback in terms of money lost is not more than what you would make by having gone in early at lesser of a value. I'm talking myself into circles here, but you get the point. Is there are some situations where it makes sense, right? You can earn a little bit of coin here in college, but if you can get going and you can start the clock and get to that second contract where you're either way, there's only so many miles that you can put on these bodies at this point. And once it makes sense, once you get that feedback, once people are giving you some fair and, you know, kind of unfiltered opinions about what your potential is, you follow it. You go where that leads you.
So let's get to the clock here for a moment, because part of this clock is the now 5 years of the, quote, early signing period, which has now changed, you know, decisions being made by coaches and the movement. When you've got a team like Notre Dame, for example, not knowing their college football playoff fate, even though one could guess, and losing its head coach, you sit back and go, you got to be kidding me. Really? Do they need to change the clock as to when that signing period takes place? And if so, what would your choice be?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I thought that Manny Diaz answer the other day, somebody asked him, I think Corey Geiger asked him, you know, whether or not there's a better way to do this. And it was striking to me in the sense that you don't hear a lot of people talk about it in this term, but college football is attached to the semester system. This is higher education.
Yeah.
And so the way that the calendar works for college football is different, right? It's you have a bowl game that lands typically squarely in between the end of the fall semester and the beginning of the spring semester. So, it's complicated. I'm not exactly sure where you put all of these things so that you have, right? Like the way that he laid it out, the NFL has this system that makes sense where it's all in a line, it all, right? Like the Super Bowl ends and then you start to have this evaluation period for the draft and the combine and all of those things all work in a simple, fairly straightforward order. That doesn't exist for college football. And so now you're having, I don't know, what do you think the early signing period should become?
August 15th. If college basketball can do it November 9th,
yep.
Why can't college football do it on the 15th? And then,
so you're saying before the senior season.
Before the senior season. These guys already know where they want to go. What evaluations change during the course of it? You have a late signing period. You can use that the first Wednesday of February. There's been an evaluation that changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want them to structure a calendar in such a way where I'd go August 15th before the season because it's worked for college basketball. It can work for college football. I also want it structured in such a way where coaches get time off.
Yep. No, I agree. I think that it's complicated.
Coaches are family men too. Let them have a life.
Yep. I completely agree. I mean, I thought that some of the answers that you heard on Friday from Penn State's bowl media were very telling. I mean, James Franklin was asked about kind of evaluating the offense, and it was his reaction. It wasn't an offense to the person who asked the question, but he was like, when would I have had time to do that, to do a deep dive?
Exactly.
Right? I mean, it's not possible. And so these guys, as soon as it's so funny to me because, and again, I mean, I think I brought this up to you the last time we talked. The season ends with that last game, and you think to yourself, oh,
right.
Deep breath.
And that,
nope.
Right. And that's my point about August 15th. I think now, starting August 16th, you can really lock in. Your recruiting staff can lock in on other things. You as the coach can really lock in on your team and lock in on your team for the foreseeable future instead of constantly trying to, you know, and that's why I would move it up, but it's got to be structured in such a way where there is a strict dead period that allows coaches to get away for a bit. They need time off too. So
you keep that dead period in July then?
Keep the dead period in July. Yeah, I would. As a matter of fact, I think they need. Everybody in June pretty much knows where they're going, don't you think?
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
You look at
Penn State's run of commitments, of verbal commitments this year. I mean, you're talking about 80% of the class committed in really a 2-week span in July.
Exactly. Great point. Now I want to go to another one. A year ago on this show, right about now, I started talking about a 12-team playoff. And then about 4 months, 5 months later, all of a sudden we started hearing about a 12-team playoff. You know what? James Franklin made, I thought, a great point the other day, and I want to get your take on it. He says, you know what? The heck with it. Just go big. And so, you know what? Go to 16, and here's the reason why I want to go to 16. Okay? There's a couple reasons. One, okay, fewer opt-outs. And two, guess what? You got to stay in the classroom because you need to be academically eligible.
Sure. My larger take on all of this in terms of a playoff and size of a playoff and college football's health as a sport is that so much of it has been rendered irrelevant. So many of these programs are in a space where it's not even really possible to get to the playoff at this point.
Yep.
When you've got three programs who, look, let's evaluate it on the whole, right? There are four spots per year. And so when you've got two programs or three programs who are filling over 6 years more than half of those spots.
Right.
Like it's just, what is a Wisconsin to do? Like, what is the future for Wisconsin? What is the future for, all over the Washington, you name it. Like there are programs who are investing in the program. They want to play the game. They want to be part of the action. And it is, how do you recruit and get players to want to come be part of your program if that is not the ceiling? If you can't if you can't even enter into that marketplace of being part of the conversation of, oh, hey, this is a program that every year, every other year, every 3 years is going to position itself to be a part of that. The NFL does not have anything close to that type of a problem.
Right.
With 32 teams, half of them are going to the playoffs every year.
Right.
So every team gets into the playoffs every couple of years, every 3 or 4 years at least.
Right.
Like you just don't have those long droughts. And so, to me, that's where it becomes even more of a problem with college football than the NFL, because the NFL at least has a draft.
Yep.
At least in the NFL, you those teams that are at the bottom or those teams that are consistently losing have an opportunity to restock their franchise with talent. That's not the case. That is not the case in college football.
Well, FCS, for some reason, has the ability to have a 24-team playoff.
Yep.
And for some reason, Montana State and North Dakota State appear to be enthused about playing a 17th game.
Yep.
Really? I mean, I thought we were supposed to be. I thought a 17th game was supposed to be just an unqualified disaster.
Right.
They seem to be genuinely like you don't have players at Montana State and Bozeman and over in Fargo saying, "Oh no, at 17, it's too many. I think I'll opt out." It's not happening. It's like,
yep.
You can come up with 1,000 excuses that make no sense.
No, it's the academic excuse has always been baloney. It just is.
Sure,
these players.
That's why I brought up, okay, being academically eligible, because there'd be a lot of pressure on you to be academically eligible if your team is in the playoff.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could play the academic game too.
Right. No, it is. There are. College football is a world of dogma, right? I mean, it is just these tried and true things that people hold deeply, deeply as beliefs without being willing to change, without being willing to identify what the path forward or what the future might look like and how it can be better and how it can be improved. And so until people start to embrace the reality that things can be done differently and in a better way, you're going to keep having these types of problems. But the thing that I fear for college football is this needs to happen sooner rather than later.
Yes, like, you're right.
The train has left the station, and you need to wrangle this and start to have some organization, start to have some structure about what the game is going to look like moving forward.
Absolutely right. Sooner rather than late. And look, you can do all the delaying tactics you want, but you know what? After a while, you're like, you know what? Guys, okay, you're not helping the game. Okay? Stop being part of the problem and be the solution. All right. Happy holidays to you and that beautiful family of yours.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You as well. Enjoy your time in Tampa, and we'll catch up soon.
Sounds great, my friend. Thank you.
All right. Bye.